This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet. Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Hello and welcome to an 1865 podcast special in which we celebrate Forest getting into Wembley for the first time in almost 30 years. My name is Rich Ferraro, and in today's podcast, we will be having a more considered look back at the playoff semi-final matches against Sheffield United, and we will be reflecting a little bit upon the pitch invasion and the consequences. Naturally, we will also be looking forward to our big day out against Huddersfield, and we'll be hearing from both a Sheffield United fan and a Huddersfield fan to reflect and look forward. Now, let's introduce our panel with a question. So if you can give us just in a sentence, panel, are you feeling confident? Let's start with Stephen Toplis.
I am feeling quietly confident.
Okay. Maradona in the Midlands?
Never.
Not even a sentence required. And Baz?
Yes. just about.
Okay, and this might be a good time to say hello to occasional contributor to this podcast, Nick Miller, who, having watched the Sunderland match, then posted on Twitter saying, I'm getting pre-traumatic stress disorder from watching this. So, and congratulations to Sunderland, by the way. I hope we're not playing you next season. So while we try and get a grip of ourselves, we're going to hear from a Blades fan with some considered thoughts on the two playoff semi-finals.
Hi there, my name's Hal from the YouTube channel Chef United Way. I just want to first begin by saying congratulations to Nottingham Forest and the vast majority of Forest fans that I know, and having spent a lot of time, you know, in university near the area, all the Forest fans I know are genuinely good people. I think that was reflected in how much money was raised for Billy Sharp's charitable foundation. So just hats off, and I do not want one horrible incident at the end of the game to reflect a very decent fan base. So just wanted to get that out there from the start. Also, I very much hope you enjoyed the other night and that you look forward to a wonderful day out at Wembley. We've had our fair share, you know, nine times now in the playoffs. We've been to Wembley a lot and we've only ever lost. So I hope you have a very different experience. I want Sheffield United to have lost to the best. So I hope that Forest get promotion. You deserve to be in the Premier League. Forest, a founding member of the Premiership, and I believe a top flight club with a wonderful, wonderful history. I actually live quite close to Stuart Pearce and I often see him on my walks on the Phoenix Trail. So Psycho and myself, I'd like to say we're now on first name terms because I've seen him that many times and yeah, a really, really nice chap. But looking back at that game, you know, a horrible game for a Sheffield United fan and Forest fan, I would imagine. Lots of nail biting at times end to end, at other times very much dominated by the Blades, but it just wasn't to be for United. And I think over the piece, even though we won on the night 2-1, our first ever second leg away playoff win in 90 minutes, I actually never really felt confident that we were going to win that game. And that's probably just my bladiness, you know, supporting United as long as I have since 1982. I know that you get a certain feeling and I just never felt it. I'm as excited as I got at that second goal, which you can see on YouTube on the watch along. Deep down, I think I was pretty much resigned. And certainly when it went to penalties, I held very, very little hope. Trying to remain positive, but I certainly wasn't surprised that the Forest fans that were telling me beforehand that they were booking their hotels for Wembley were quite right to do so. I thought it was a fair outcome over the two legs because Nottingham Forest should have had it sewn up at Bramall Lane and really should have scored five goals. So definitely over the piece, Forest deserved it. I think they've been a great side since Steve Cooper took over. Contrasts, you know, you could say, and also similarities between the two sides, and getting those new managers in really did change our fortunes. So well done, Forest. Thoroughly deserved. Good luck in that playoff final, Huddersfield. We've played them in a playoff final. Never easy, but I hope you have a great day. I hope the weather's kind to you as well. It makes a huge difference. And that's something that Brits always talk about. And if of course, for whatever reason, it doesn't end up happening, I think it's really important that we try and stem the aggression that some fans now have between the two sides. I don't think that rivalry is particularly healthy. And as I say, all the Forest fans I know have been really good, genuine people, and raising that money for the Billy Sharp Foundation, hats off, incredible. Hopefully, you are celebrating at Wembley and have a wonderful day out. Well done.
Thank you very much, Hal, for joining us and contributing those very magnanimous thoughts, and we wish you all the best. Now, Baz, we recorded our match report on Tuesday night when we just got home after a very, very, very long evening. And so we're still a bit raw, and obviously we were jubilant, but emotions are still pretty high. So what did you make of Hal's considered thoughts?
First of all, that was really, really nice of him. In general, he just came across really, really well. I think, arguably, yeah, on balance over the two legs, we deserve to go through. But it worries me a lot that we should have had it in the bag and we didn't, and it took penalties to get there. We could talk about the pitch invasion and stuff, I guess, in a bit. But yeah, on the football side of it, yeah, we shouldn't have had to go through that in the first place. And obviously, with our playoff history, then the fact that we gave away that lead put me through a lot of anxiety.
Yes, and as you mentioned in our match report, it was quite a moment that I noticed out of the corner of my eyes, commenting to one of my non-Forest supporting friends, and I just said, I was sat next to Baz, and just in extra time, he just put his hood up and he just hunched down. So, all right, Maradon the Midlands, you're probably the least optimistic of us on this podcast today. And I think it's worth reflecting on the fact that I saw someone mention that Forest were actually ahead for 155 minutes of the two legs of the playoffs. So do you think that, as Baz said, do you think it's actually, on reflection, just about fair that Forest were probably the better team over the two matches?
Yeah, I think so. Overall, I think we created the better chances, especially in the first leg. The second leg, Sheffield were undoubtedly the better team. They sort of stopped us playing and stopped it from being a football match, which I think was a mistake they made in the first leg. They were sort of buoyed by the confidence of the win against Fulham and thought they could beat us at football, which I don't think many teams can, not only in this division, but probably division above as well. But yeah, I mean, being the pessimistic Forest fan that I am, I was pretty sure that we'd blown it by not taking all those chances. And that last minute goal just capped it off for me. And the first 15 minutes or so, I was very worried because they looked like they were in the mood and we just hadn't turned up. And that goal settled me down. And then I let my optimism get away from me. I don't know what's the phrase. I've lost thought now. But so much so that at half time, I was looking on the Huddersfield website to see how they were doing their Wembley tickets, and then I was cursing myself in the second. I was like, why? I know you can't do this. Why are they looking at how to get Wembley tickets? And yeah, and I was by the time they scored the second goal, I was convinced we were going to lose because they were just scoring with such ease. They just reminded me of Yeovil and Blackpool, the way they just walked through and scored. I was expecting them to turn 3 or 4 or 5 by the end of the match. So it was a very pleasant surprise that we managed to get through.
Stephen, I mean, Maradon Midlands touched upon something quite apart from his superstition or maybe cursing it. Maradon the Midlands touched upon something that was very important and we talked about at length after the first leg, which was we didn't take advantage of that first leg match. We should have won, you know, by 4 or 5 goals, shouldn't we?
We should. And when you're now looking towards a final and a one-off game, you need to take your chances, because if you don't, a team like Huddersfield will punish you. We've seen that throughout the season. They're a side who hang on in games sometimes, but they find a way of winning even when they've not been at their best. So from Forest's point of view, that first leg at Bramall Lane has to be a lesson that we need to take our chances and when the opportunities arise, put the game to bed, because we don't want to see a repeat of what happened in that second leg, where certainly in the second half of the second leg, it felt like Forest were not in control of the tie anymore. Up until that point and in spells of the first half of the second leg, we felt like we were in control and the better team. The second leg, that all evaporated. And I think that's why, as Maradona of the Midlands touched on, it felt like the game was slipping away from us, as it has done before against Yeovil, against Blackpool in the past, those kind of matches. And yeah, my big concern was when the pressure was on and suddenly we had a team coming at us with nothing to lose, we were all over the place. But thankfully, we regained ourselves in extra time. I think Sheffield United tired as well, which helped. But I'm hoping that we're a stronger team now for that experience and the way that we came back and the way that we got through that semi-final.
As? Because we didn't take our chances in the first leg, and Sheffield United came at us and properly stopped us playing. And I think we mentioned it in the match report. If they had had Billy Sharp on the pitch, or even if they'd had McBurney on the pitch, then we would have lost that tie in normal time. And that's because... So in that way, we're fortunate to have got through.
Yeah. And we'll talk about McBurney being on the pitch a little bit later. There's a slightly different context to that. Now, I'm just going to throw something out there and I'll be interested in your thoughts. Although we lost recently against Luton and Bournemouth and we bemoaned the fact that both of those teams kind of shut us down, meant that Forest ended up playing longer balls and so on, I think the only two matches where we kind of convincingly lost were Middlesbrough and Cardiff. And now hear me out on this one before you shut that down. Because against Luton and Bournemouth, if we'd scored, we wouldn't have lost. And if we'd had decisions, we did score at Luton and it was chalked out. We probably should have had a penalty at Bournemouth. And so those things would have added a different complexion to the match. And against Bournemouth in particular, well, against Luton, we conceded a penalty. Against Bournemouth, we conceded a late goal where, admittedly, we switched off. Now, I'm not denying that we got outthought and outplayed in those games. But does that give you any hope, Maradona, the Midlands?
Yeah, I suppose I think that the big pitch at Wembley will help us. The two, talking of Luton and Bournemouth, they both appear to be smaller pitches. I don't know the exact measurements, obviously, but they just come across as smaller pitches. So I think the big pitch at Wembley will help us. It'll be much harder to work and close down for sort of 90 minutes, especially in that atmosphere. I think it does give me optimism. And I think it will be more of a football match. I think they may try for the first half to try and stop us playing, but I don't think they can maintain that for 90 minutes.
Okay. And Stephen, one thing that also occurred to me, you mentioned about how the Blades players, I think after 80 minutes, they were a bit knackered, weren't they? And I think that's why we were able to repel them. And actually, for a little period, we did kind of regain our composure there. But thinking about Bournemouth and about Sheffield United in the second leg, I wonder as well, actually, that Premier League experience that the players have. You know, these are two teams with Premier League players, Premier League management. I think that experience showed against a Forest team that is still, when we think about it, has got academy players and loanees making up the bulk of the 11, yeah?
Yeah, the depth that those teams have. And you look at somebody like Sander Berger, who's a Norway international, he cost £30 million. You've got Morgan Gibbs-White, who's one of the best players in this division and probably should be playing in the division above. And then Bournemouth with the Premier League players they still have and the strengthening that they were able to do with their money in January. Yeah, there's more depth in those squads. And I think there is that Premier League experience. But at the same time, we've equipped ourselves well against Premier League sides in the FA Cup this season. Arsenal, Leicester, Liverpool, we gave all of them a good game. Could have even beaten Liverpool on another day with a chance going the other side of the post and an offside decision going another way. So if there are any doubts about Premier League experience in our squad, I think we forget about it and just focus on the fact that we've actually performed very well against Premier League sides in knockout football this season. I think that is a massive advantage when it comes to how we approach this game and how the game will play out at Wembley.
Baz, on that topic, before we started recording, you were harking back to the FA Cup run and you're saying about how those were one-off matches. Is it easier if you are a player who's mostly played at academy level and championship bottom half? Is it easier to acquit yourself against a Premier League team knowing it's a one-off game and therefore there's nothing to lose than it is in the playoffs where actually having got there, you've got everything to lose?
Probably. I think as well, if it's a one-off game, then you can build it up. And because I think that one of the things that say the difference between an incredibly talented academy player, like say you, Johnson's a bad example because he's actually done this, but say Alex Mighton, someone like that who's come through the academy and is just breaking into the first team. The difference between that and someone who's been there and done it is their consistency, but consistency doesn't matter on a one-off game. So that talent that they've got, they just need to make it happen for that 90 minutes. They don't have to worry about what happens afterwards. So I think that could be very, very useful for us. And as you say, as the Maradona of the Midland says, the bigger pitch as well, I'm sure, is going to help us.
Mm. And coming back to you, Maradona of the Midlands, do you think that in that, you know, Baz was about to talk about Brennan Johnson, in a way, Brennan's going to be in a better position to advise players like, you know, players who are stalwarts of the Forest team, like your Worrells and McKennas and Yateses and even Garners, because although they've played big matches, Brennan's been to Wembley in a playoff final and he's been there and done it. Do you think that will help?
Yeah, I think so. I think the experience has to help. I don't know how much advice he'd be able to give the others, but I mean, for his own personal performance, I'm sure having been there, experienced the nerves before, he can maybe improve on what went wrong last time. And it's got to help. But I think Steve Cooper's so clued in on everything. I think the penalties the other night, it's just a prime example of that. That I think everything will be focused in just preparing them to a perfect level during this week now. And I can't imagine there'll be many, many teams who've ever been as well prepared, both mentally and physically, going into a Wembley match as this Forest team will be.
And as you'd mentioned the penalties, I don't want to dwell too much on it, but two things. Firstly, Stephen, as you'd mentioned, Sander Berger, he was the only player who was listed on Samba's water bottle whose penalty kick he didn't manage to save because I didn't see Njai's name on there. I don't think he was expecting him to take one. And then also, I want to apologise to Joe Lolly because I said that it was one of the worst penalties I'd ever seen. And actually, it was closer than it looked on the night. Funnily enough, when it went to a penalty shootout in one of our other WhatsApp groups, one of our mates posted a picture of Chris Waddle because he said it's Pelantes, like he famously said on the radio, and put a picture of Chris Waddle. And I said, I went back afterwards and said, was that in anticipation of Joe Lolly's penalty, which was pretty much a carbon copy of the Waddle penalty in 1990 for those of us who are old enough to remember. But Stephen, I want to take a step away from that just for one second, because obviously you were at the match on Tuesday night, and one of the incidents that we discussed briefly was Heckingbottom when he shoved that ball into Jed Spence's midriff. And do you think that was actually a very clever piece of management? He did that to kind of take the sting out of Forest, and kind of it was a psychological blow.
I think he wanted to make it into an ugly game because he saw that that was the only way Sheffield United were going to come back into it. At that point, we'd restored the two-goal lead with Brennan's goal, and I think it was slipping away from Sheffield United in that that first half after we'd scored. So I think he was just desperate and trying to find a way to get the match back on the terms that he wanted. Physical, aggressive. Obviously, I think it was quite an aggressive act. I think he was quite lucky to have not been sent to the stands, although I do wonder if the referee gave the yellow card instead of the red, because if you'd have sent Heckenbottom to the stands amongst all the Forest fans at that point, I don't think he would have been in a very welcoming company, shall we say. So it was poor from him, but I can understand why he did it. And you could argue that the way they came out in that second half, it worked for them, because it G'd them up, didn't it, after that happened, and that carried them through the second 45 minutes.
And Baz, you're nodding your head there. And of course, in our match report on Tuesday night, we did say that we think that maybe it was Michael Oliver trying to make sure that the referee wasn't at the centre of the story, because, you know, Forest win match after Heckingbottom sent to stands in first half would have been a very different story than Forest win on penalties, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think I said in the match report is we started chanting, "You're just a rubbish Neil Warnock." And I think Heckingbottom's half-time team talk was probably, "What would Neil Warnock do in this situation?" And that's exactly what they did to us. They did exactly what a Warnock side would do. And obviously, the Blades have got that in them.
Let's move on, because we do need to talk about pitch invasions. And the night before our playoff semi-final, we saw Huddersfield fans run onto the pitch to celebrate. But in the process, James Bree got clouted on the head as an away player who was just lost in the moment of having, you know, lost his playoff semi-final. That wasn't acceptable. There was a Luton fan, an old chap in the away end, who had a coin thrown at him. And there's a picture of him with claret running all the way down his head. That's not acceptable. And Baz and I discussed, and Baz, you were quite upset on Tuesday night, because you were saying this is taking the shine off the night, because what should be a great story about a fabulous encounter, a classic playoff semi-final over two legs, has become a story about fans basically acting in a thuggish and brutish way. Married on the Midlands, you were not at the match. What did it look and feel like from somebody who was watching from afar?
Initially, I don't think that the TV people didn't really, or the radio and the radio people, just sort of described it as sort of jubilant scenes. It's become almost acceptable now. I know we discussed it pre-match, and we were sort of saying, well, hope people don't go on the pitch, but and the club had issued that statement saying don't go on the pitch, but they still did. For the most part, it was just like a jubilant sort of thing. It wasn't until quite a lot later, so maybe an hour or two later, that the Billy Sharp incident sort of came to light. And then sort of people are going, yeah, this is out of order, we shouldn't be doing this. But they shouldn't have been doing it, full stop. It's a really selfish act to do, just running onto the pitch. It's all about me, me, me. You're not thinking of the players. You're not thinking of the other supporters in the stadium who aren't going onto the pitch. And it's just a pure selfish act, and it shouldn't happen. Cluffy made his thoughts very clear about it back in the 90s when he clouted those two fans, and nothing's changed since then. The pitch is for the players and the referee, nobody else, and you should never go on like that ever again.
Stephen, Baz, you wanted to jump in there.
Yeah, I disagree.
Go on.
So you can remember there was a period of time when the stewards used to come out with that yellow tape to stop people getting on the pitch. But we've always had an end of season pitch invasion. What we haven't had is people getting hurt, opposition players getting hit, people getting coins chucked at them. That's different, and that's not okay. But I don't see any problem with celebrating if you've been through a long, hard season. And running on the pitch and celebrating that. I know it's illegal, and I know you shouldn't do it, and I know it's their workplace and all that sort of stuff, but we did it for years without anyone getting hurt. So whatever the difference is now, get rid of that bit and keep the celebration.
So we have done it in the past, but I remember being in the upper tier of the Trent End and booing them when they did it, and everybody else in the upper tiers are booing them, and they were on, and the people looking at the pitch, shrugging their shoulders, what? And then, like, as they were doing nothing serious. So, yeah, I disagree, because it stopped the players showing their appreciation back then, and it stopped it again. It's just, it's black and white. You're not, there's big signs on the side of the pitch saying it is illegal to go onto the playing surface. There was a guy on Talk Sport, a Forest fan, who came on after the Billy Sharp thing came. He was lying through his teeth, going, "Oh, I had no idea it was illegal to go onto the pitch. I just ran on. Just the moment took over me." And it's not the moment taking over them. It's a premeditated act. They talk about it before the game. They talk about it during halftime and during the game, and they're waiting to go on. And it's not acceptable. I mean, there's maybe reason people are talking about drugs and things being involved now, but that doesn't make it okay.
And I will come back to that in just a second. But also, Married on the Midlands, one of our friends who regular podcast listeners will have heard, Luton fan Ryan, he was in the away end at Huddersfield, and he was saying that, just like Forest fans experienced at Bournemouth when Bournemouth beat us recently and were celebrating their promotion, there's always a set of fans who will go and goad the away fans. That happened for Forest fans at Bournemouth, that happened for Luton fans at Huddersfield. That's not okay, is it, Married on the Midlands?
No, it's not okay. It's
not jubilation, that's goading.
Yeah, and there's such a thing as being a bad loser, but there's such a thing as being a bad winner too. And that's maybe even worse than being a bad loser. And just to do that, it just shows just a really pathetic side of their character, and they need to grow up.
Stephen, I'm just going to throw out there that Forrest did, as we predicted, put out a statement. Nick Randall, please do not go on the pitch, for several reasons. One is we want the fans and the players to be able to celebrate together, and we had to wait 50 minutes for Steve Cooper and then the team to come out. Number two, we want to preserve the playing surface because the team need to train on there. And people ignored that. There were grown men doing knee slides and belly slides and Klinsmann dives on there. And then number three, the thing about flares, which they've been talking about for ages and pointing out that, you know, there have been flares thrown into the away end. That's not okay. There's a young lad in the main stand who ended up, a 10-year-old lad who ended up with a flare in his hoodie and was, you know, they had to take evasive action to stop him getting potentially serious burns. These are serious issues, aren't they, Stephen?
They are. And since lockdown, I've noticed a real shift in the behaviour of some people at football matches. People who are going and thinking they can behave how they want and act how they want with no thought or consideration for people around them. There'll be people, fans there, who just want to go and enjoy the game. They don't want to then worry about drunken louts throwing flares or causing trouble or throwing bottles, coins, etc. People just want to go and watch the game. And I've noticed these behaviours have crept in more since lockdown. And I don't know if that's people having experienced the last 2 years feel now they can just go out into the world and do whatever they want and whenever they want. And if it's just a wider society issue that has also crept into football. But I just don't know how you can stop it. Because what happened the other night, in my view, was always going to happen. If Forest were going to win that game, there were always going to be fans that came onto the pitch. People were openly saying it on social media before the game. There were people posting on Forest groups saying, yeah, you know, let's go on the pitch and celebrate when we, you know, if we get through. And some fans were jumping on top of that and agreeing. Some were actually disagreeing and saying, well, come on, you know, that it's not for you to go on the pitch. You shouldn't be doing it. It's illegal, etc. And you just had those kind of stock social media replies of, oh, well, you must be fun at parties, or stop being a party pooper, all this kind of stuff. So there were always going to be people entering the pitch. And sadly, with that, we've had idiots go on there as well who've spoiled it for everybody else, and we're talking about that instead of actually reflecting on Forest creating a bit of history and producing a memorable night's football.
I think one of the other things, so City Ground Pigeon on Twitter was making a point that it's narcissism. It's the same as people who drive after they've had a drink or taken drugs, which is, it's you know, it's always fine until something goes wrong, isn't it? And that's exactly what happened. Now, even then, I've seen plenty on Twitter from people saying, I went on the pitch and I didn't do anything wrong. It was just that one idiot. But none of that would have happened. The Sharp thing wouldn't have happened. The McBurney thing, whatever it is, and we don't know what it is yet. The McBurney thing wouldn't have happened. It's putting the safety of players at risk. And also, I was making the point that if you look at the highlights of the Luton Huddersfield match, you could see the match officials were legging it off the pitch before they blew the final whistle, because they knew that a pitch invasion was going to happen, and they knew that that puts people's safety in jeopardy. Baz, what do you think? It's narcissism, isn't it?
It is, but I think that the point that Stephen made was what's happening now is different. And there's a level of aggression and stuff that involved in it that wasn't the case a few years ago. It might be that it's like, I don't know, like the 70s and 80s kind of thing coming back. I don't know what it is, but what's happening now, what's happened over the last 2 or 3 weeks across several games, what happened at the Euros at Wembley, that is different to what's been happening over the last 10, 15 years. And I think that's the problem more than just the pitch. The pitch invasion allows it to happen. Yeah, and get rid of the pitch invasion and it won't happen. It will just move somewhere else. But it is a wider, as Stephen said, there is a wider thing going on here. So you hear about retail workers and everyone else complaining about being abused in the streets and stuff like that. So something's happening and it's making us look bad. But it's not down to the pitch invasion that's making us look bad. It's the thing that's happening that's making us look bad.
So we'll have to leave that episode of The Moral Maze there for now, because we've got plenty more to talk about. So thank you, everyone, so far. Listener, in just a second, we'll be back and we'll be looking forward to our big day out at Wembley.
You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Hello there and welcome back to 1865. We're delighted to be joined by a friend of the podcast, Brady Frost from the Huddersfield Fan Podcast, and he takes that chance. Now, welcome to 1865 once again, Brady, and congratulations on reaching the playoff final. My first question to you is really, as a Huddersfield fan, how has this season matched up to your expectations?
Hi guys, thanks for having me on, and yeah, congratulations to you guys too. You know, an amazing achievement to reach the playoff final. Has the season lived up to my expectations? Not in the slightest. It's been, you know, far, far better than I could have possibly imagined. You know, given last season, I think we only won 3 games in 24 in the league in the end, you know, finished 20th. I was expecting for something similar because I just didn't think we had the quality and the players to kind of play the style Carlos Corberan wants. And to be honest, I think we don't talk about it enough in football, but whether a place is the right fit. And I just got the impression that maybe Huddersfield wasn't the right fit with Carlos Corberan. But, well, hey, what do I know? You know, third in the league, you know, in the playoff final, it's been a fantastic season, you know, and one I think Town fans have, you know, really enjoyed. I think it's, again, because obviously we were in the playoff final in 2017 and that was considered like one of the great teams. It's strange because, you know, this team has finished on more points than they did under that, under David Wagner's season. You know, I would argue the squad is better, you know, in terms of a lot harder to beat. Whereas under Wagner, we could lose a game 4-0, but then, you know, win a big game. So, yeah, it's been fantastic. And, you know, I think full credit to Carlos Corberan for, you know, getting his methods across, tweaking his tactics. I think that's been a big part. You know, we're hard to beat. You know, the transfers have been fantastic. You haven't played a single fee for a transfer, all free transfers or loan deals. So it's been an amazing season on an incredible, you know, budget, really. And the fact that we only finished 6 points off Bournemouth with the wage bill they have, I think is testament to the recruitment team, the squad and the manager.
Yeah, so you mentioned Carlos Corberan a few times there about whether he was going to be the right fit and the doubts that you had. He started really well as your gaffer last season in his first season, and then things dropped off really dramatically. So how much do you think his management style and his tactical acumen have evolved this season?
Yeah, Corberan started really well last season. I think it was, again, like, you know, new manager, new system. It was very different to Danny Cowley. I think some people have been a bit revisionist about Danny Cowley's style of football, you know, but ultimately when he took over, you know, no team had stayed up in the position we were in, and he achieved that job. And yeah, Carlos came in, and then things kind of dropped off. I think, you know, this playing squad wasn't great. You know, there was players who didn't want to be there. You know, players who just weren't good enough. And to be honest, we got a lot of injuries, and Carlos had to, you know, had to chuck in some of the youngsters, and some fared better than others. You know, others suffered. I think what's really changed this season is they've adapted. I think, you know, when he came in, obviously being the Leeds under 23 managers and working with Marcelo Bielsa, I think a lot of people were making comparisons to Marcelo Bielsa. But I think Carlos, what has really impressed me, his ability to adapt. You know, you'll hear when other managers speak in their pre-match press conferences or after, it's very difficult to work out what formation Corberan plays. You know, we have our formations that we like, but he'll obviously tweak things a lot, you know, during matches, you know. And it's just been impressive to see. I think the big thing this season is we're a really hard team to beat. You know, we conceded the most goals in the division last season, you know, more than Wickham and all the other teams that got relegated. And we're hard to break down. You know, I think people refer to it as a bit boring, but again, like, you know, that was our problem and they fixed it no end. So yeah, I just think we're a tough team to beat, and I think he's adapted, and, you know, like all good managers do, you know, looks at the tools he's got, and, you know, he's making, you know, great use out of them. And yeah, long may it continue. Yeah, just been really impressive.
So let's move on to talking about the head-to-head between Forest and Huddersfield. So Forest and the Terriers have beaten each other this season. Well, I'm still not quite sure how we didn't score against you in the league match at the City Ground. What do you think about the Reds' form and how they looked in the run-up at the end of the season?
Yeah, I think that game you're talking about, that was a bit, you know, obviously you guys are a great attacking side, and I think we just, again, as I touched on in an early answer, we're quite good at, you know, again, you could argue maybe it's lucky in that game, but we've had quite a few of those games where we, you know, managed to ride it out and get a victory maybe against the run of play. So, you know, maybe there's something in that. I think, you know, Forest finished the season strong. I was interested to see, you know, given you kind of had a shootout for automatics with Bournemouth, and obviously, you know, for Forest fans, came out on the wrong end of that. I was really interested to see how you would pick yourselves up. You know, obviously the draw against Hull on the final of the season, you know, you can argue. But I think we've seen, you know, that you can get over the line. You know, the first leg against Sheffield United, you blew them away. I don't know how you didn't win that game by more than two goals. And then, yeah, the return leg, I think Sheffield United were impressive. Look, I think Steve Cooper's done an amazing job. You're certainly, I think we're probably the two most informed teams, you know, in the league. So it'll be an interesting matchup. Forest were the team I was wary about, you know, out of all the playoff teams, just because you have got a good side. You know, I think I would argue, given the players you've had, you know, you maybe have been finishing in false positions before, and we know how bad it was working with Houghton. I think this is the two most informed teams, you know, in the league, and it's carried on now. But yeah, they're going into a straight shootout for the playoff final. So I think for the neutral, could be a really good game. But I'll be a bag of nerves, and I'm sure you guys will too.
Oh, absolutely. I think the playoff, when you get classic playoff matches, it's always a case that it's great for everyone except the fans who are actually involved. And the Sheffield United match, especially the second leg, I think is probably testament to that for us. Now, we've talked about that idea, you know, you mentioned the whole match. Forest have finished the season with quite a few players who are playing on one leg. We're carrying a lot of niggly injuries. How's your squad looking?
Yeah, our squad's looking okay, really. So it looks like we'll miss Matty Pearson. He's been injured. He's been out for, I think, four or five weeks now. Didn't play any of the semi-final matches. You know, there was talk about him coming back, but I doubt we'd stick him straight in, even though he's a big character and has been really good this season. Sorba Thomas, I think he was kind of the key one. You know, he came on for the last half an hour against Luton and, you know, provided the assist and has been so important to us this season in terms of set pieces. So, yeah, he should be fit for the final. It'll be interesting to see if he starts or if it is another sub appearance. Danny Ward, who's been our top scorer this season, had a really good season and really impressed a lot of Town fans, not just with his goals, but his work off the ball and, you know, the press and the energy he brings to the team. He went down injured in the first half of the semi-final second leg. We've not really heard much about that. So, you know, fingers crossed, I think that would be the main concern. But it could mean that Jordan Rhodes, who obviously got the winner against Luton, you know, in the second leg, could start. So, yeah, the team's looking okay. A couple of injuries, as you kind of expect it at this point. But I think, you know, what's been really successful to the team is the fitness of the side, you know, and we can keep going and going long games. And yeah, I think that's boded really well for us. So yeah, fingers crossed.
Mm. And you've talked about a lot of outfield players there. Let's talk about the goalkeepers. These two teams have got the two best keepers in the league, statistically speaking, if nothing else. Do you think that they're going to be busy on the day?
Yeah, Sambra and Nichols have been fantastic. You know, I think them along with Mark Travers have, you know, been the best free keepers in the league. You know, Nichols' team of the season, it's been absolutely incredible. You know, to get him on a free from MK Dons, you know, people were saying he was the second choice. It was actually because of a contract dispute why he wasn't playing. But he's been fantastic and the signing of the season, you know, free transfer makes team of the season. Yeah, he can be a busy boy, especially in these big games. I think he will be busy, you know, at Wembley. I think Sambra will as well. It could be an interesting game. You know, you guys are quite ferocious in attack and I feel like you come in waves and like try and blow teams out of the water. And I think if we're going to get any joy on the day, Nichols will be heavily involved. And, you know, I don't think it's just his saves. What's really impressed me this season is his calmness. You know, he calms the defence. He takes the sting out of attacks. And as you guys have probably seen, he loves to time waste, so I'd expect to see some of that, especially if you guys are on top. Yeah, Sambra as well, you know, I was his penalty shootout heroics for you guys were amazing. And I've already seen Huddersfield Town be victorious in penalty shootouts at Wembley. I really hope it doesn't go to penalties, you know, in the final, because I don't think my my heart could take it. But yeah, Sambra's been great as well. You know, he can be, I think you could say he could be a bit erratic, but I think he's been fantastic this season, you know. So yeah, I think they'll both be busy. Like I say, I think it'll be a good game for the neutral. But yeah, I'm sure both sets of fans will be a nervous wreck on when the game kicks off. So yeah, best of luck to you guys as well. Obviously, may the best team win and let's hope it's a good game.
Thank you very much, Brady. As you said, may the best team win. So we're joined by Stephen Topliss, by the Marathon the Midlands, by Baz, and by Tom Newton, who's joined us for part two. Tom, just very briefly, I started today's podcast by asking our panel if they're feeling confident about the big day out. How are you feeling?
I'm not too bad at the moment. I think if we can play like we did in the first half, in the first leg against Sheffield United, then I think we will win. But if we play like we did in the second half on Tuesday night, I think we might make things difficult for ourselves. But like Brady says from the Huddersfield podcast, may the best team win.
You very kindly provided a combined Forest versus Huddersfield 11, and I'm going to read that out now. The others in this group haven't actually seen or heard this yet, so I'm going to be very interested in their opinions. So your combined 11 was Sambra in goal. We've got Spence, Cook, McKenna, Colwill, and Harry Tuffalo at the back. Then we've got Lewis O'Brien, Jimmy Garner, and Sorba Thomas in midfield with Johnson and Davis up front. So thank you very much for providing that, Tom. Baz, I'm going to ask you what you think of that team.
That was pretty good, innit? For a championship side.
Better than Bournemouth.
Well, actually, that'd be quite interesting, wouldn't it? Or that side against Fulham, maybe. That'd be an interesting game to watch.
Forest can already beat Fulham. That's not a problem.
Yeah, but then, yeah, well, yes. You can't really complain at that, can you? More us than them, though.
Mm. Okay, Stephen, I'm going to put to you something that I put to Tom earlier, which is, I think Huddersfield fans would be frothing at the mouth about Samba being picked ahead of Lee Nichols. Now, as I mentioned in the interview with Brady, they are statistically pretty much neck and neck in terms of their championship records this season. But before I come to you, Stephen, Tom, what was it that you said in response to that?
Samba's a prick, but he's our prick.
Yeah, we've heard that before, haven't we? What do you think, Stephen?
I think the other night tips it in Samba's favour. You know, the way that he, the big saves he made and the way he took control of that penalty shootout. If it goes to penalties, I'd fancy Samba over Nichols, in all honesty. So both excellent keepers, but yeah, Samba edges it for me.
Okay. Maradon, the Midlands, do you think the big match is going to end up being a tale of two keepers?
No idea, but I hope not. I hope it's more to do with exciting, attacking football and Forest scoring about four or five goals. But they're very evenly matched teams. The record sort of across the season shows that. So it might just come down to one wondrous save at the end of the game that sort of tips it one way or the other. But time will tell, as they say.
Mm. And what do you think, Tom? I think. You've alluded to a few things, but what I also mentioned to Brady in the interview was that, you know, Forest won away and then Huddersfield came to the City Ground and they won. And that's a match where Forest absolutely threw the kitchen sink at Huddersfield for about 75 minutes. And Lee Nichols was the difference between Forest getting what would have been probably a 3-1 victory and actually missing out on any points altogether.
Yeah, we pretty much matched them over the season, you know, like because we played them in the cup. And I think for the first quarter, they were all right. Then we just like took control of the game. And similar thing happened just after Christmas when we had all the chances and just ultimately couldn't put it in the back of the net on the night. And I think the game at their place, September, when Steve Cooper was near enough announced his manager, I think the shackles were like took off the players then, and they played with a bit of freedom, and it gave us like an outlook of what things may be like under Steve Cooper, because if you remember, the formation completely changed, and that probably, I think it was Chris Hughton got the bullet in the midweek of that game or whatever
it was.
So they're probably like thinking Forest are going to play like this, and it's completely changed with a different mindset. So, but as you can see over the season, pretty much matched them, to be honest. And it was just that seven or eight game gave everybody at the start of the season why they probably finished above us. And but if we had Steve Cooper for the whole season, I think we would have been going up automatically anyway.
Brady and I had a little chat earlier in the season, and he basically said, you know what, you did a number on us in that match because Stephen Reid took over, the tactics changed. There, I have heard a rumour that basically, even though he wasn't installed yet, it was basically Steve Cooper who chose the formation and the tactics that Stephen Reid employed. Baz, I mean, the thing that's really, in many ways, very mouthwatering, in the playoffs, the teams aren't necessarily evenly matched because they are the teams who finished 3-6 in the division. In this one, we've got the teams who finished third and fourth in the division and were almost certainly, I've not checked the stats, but were pretty much the two form teams in that last third of the season. It should be a mouthwatering prospect, shouldn't it?
It should be. And it's especially the way both teams play. And I remember the Huddersfield game where they basically did a smash and grab on us. And it's one of those, it's quite worrying considering we were just saying a few minutes ago about the Sheffield United first leg where we should have buried it and taken it completely out of their reach. That's exactly what happened with Huddersfield when they played us. So it's down to us basically to take control of this game, which is a really nice position to be in. We're not going in there scared of them. We're saying actually we could do this and we've got the better of them.
And Maradon in the Midlands, when Forest have lost, with the exception of that Boxing Day match against Middlesbrough, followed by Huddersfield, and of course, that's when Forest were beset by COVID and they had half a squad. But apart from that, under Steve Cooper, when Forest have lost, they've always come roaring back in the next match. Does that give you a bit of confidence?
Yeah, not necessarily that reason. So I don't think it would have felt like a defeat on Tuesday night. And I think they're just going to be so excited about playing at Wembley. And the word of the season has been belief, hasn't it? And they're just going to be full of self-belief. And I don't think they'll have any doubt that they can go out on that pitch and play to their strengths and play to their maximum ability and win the game. I think that the way they are this season, losing doesn't even come into their thoughts. So, I think they'll be full of confidence and raring to go.
Yeah, and Stephen, Baz and I talked briefly in the match report. We just heard a little snippet of Ryan Yates, and he'd gone from talking like a fan, like he usually does, but you could just hear there was a real edge in what he said and the way he said it, in terms of like he switched over into professional footballer modes. Like, yeah, this was a really tough match, but we knew we could do it, even if it took penalties to get there. Again, it comes back to what Maradon in the Midlands was just saying, doesn't it? The belief and the confidence in this group, even when they have setbacks, where they just come back and they get up on their feet. And also, there's not been a single match where they've played badly for 90 or, in this case, 120 minutes. They've always had periods in the game where they look threatening and they could get something.
There's a determination about this squad. There's almost a constant striving to be better. And I think that comes from Steve Cooper. In his mind, when you listen to interviews and the way he speaks, whether that's previewing games or immediately after a game's finished, it's almost like the job's never done. We're straight away looking at the next challenge and what lies ahead for us. And it's a mentality which has really carried us through this season and has been behind our resurgence, the way that we've flown up the table and come through these tough games. Every time we've had a test, we've more often than not have come through it. And that fills me with a lot of confidence going into next weekend. Also add in the fact that we've got 11, 12 days break in between, so plenty of time to get players rested. There won't be, I don't think, any concerns about fatigue or tiredness creeping in. Another element on Tuesday night against Sheffield United, I think the quick turnaround between the two games will have contributed to us falling off as we did in that second half. So the rest in the players' legs, the determination that this squad has to constantly improve and never settle for a job being done, all these qualities I think will stand us in good stead for when we play against Huddersfield at Wembley in a final. And we've just got to look forward to it and hope that it all comes together for us.
Yeah, and Baz, do you want to jump in?
I think the attitude of this side, this team, this squad, is best explained by the post-match interview after the Liverpool FA Cup game, where the interviewer said to Steve Cooper, "Well, you played amazingly well there." And the first thing Steve Cooper said was, "Yeah, but we lost."
Mm-hmm.
And that explains it. They've got a job to do. And the fact that we won through on penalties, that's nice, but we've not finished the job yet.
And Maradon the Midlands, I'm just going to, Stephen had mentioned the word mentality, and of course that was Sabri Lamouchi's favourite word. And from things that Lolly and Yates in particular have said in the last couple of weeks, it does sound as though the squad, the players who were there then and are still there now, they're basically saying, you know what, actually, with hindsight, back then we were totally winging it, and now there's something different going on. It feels like that, even for us fans, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, to hark back to an even older manager, Sean O'Driscoll, the word process. I think that's shines through in everything Steve Cooper's done. It's they follow a process, and it's I think because it's been proven out on the pitch, the players believe in it 100% now. If they had a few dodgy results at the beginning, there's the doubts creeping and thinking, oh, what's this nonsense? You know, well, I don't believe in this. So just, you have to give it 100% and all the old cliches, you just run hard and all that. but the process, they follow a process, and it's clear to see during the course of the season, and that's really made the big difference this season. But it's the same players who've been bang average for years at Forest, some of them, and they've been managed to sort of lift their performance levels and perform on a consistent level.
Yeah, I should mention that for the listeners' benefit, every time someone mentions Sean O'Driscoll, Baz starts crying. So, Tom, yeah, it's really remarkable, isn't it, how not only has Steve Cooper got raised that level, but also the other thing I just want to very briefly reflect upon is every single interview that Steve Cooper has given since he's become the manager of Nottingham Forest Football Club has been A, searingly honest, and B, has struck exactly the right time. He's never said anything wrong, has he? And you contrast that to the last manager who got us to the playoffs, Billy Davis, where he never said anything right.
Yeah, and another thing is everything he says, we believe in it. And you can see that even if during the game on Tuesday, the fans dragged that team to extra time and penalties, even when they scored their second goal, everybody was up on the feet. And I've never seen that with Forest fans. We're a very fickle bunch. But this is all down to Steve Cooper's mentality and belief. And we get him, he gets the club and everything. And it's the first time everything's just linked in about 20-odd years worth of and more supporting this football club of ours.
Mm. And Stephen, again, just very briefly, if you will, it's true, isn't it? The city, I've never heard the City Ground be so noisy for the full duration of the match. There's that little period in extra time where there's just a bit of a lull. And I think, to be honest, Baz and I said the other night, because everyone was knackered. The players were knackered, the managers were knackered, the fans were knackered, and it just calmed down. But then Yatesy also said, 117 minutes, like the fans turned up the volume and we thought, we can do this. And I have to say, although playoffs are always a lottery, I was as confident as I've ever been because of us being there, of the occasion, of the mentality of the players, that we could do it.
It does feel different this season. It really does. With previous playoff campaigns, and there was a little bit of a worry that this would creep back in on Tuesday night when Sheffield United got their goals, that we could see it all happening again, another collapse and another season ends in dramatic fashion, but not in the right way for us. The mentality is so different. Everybody's bought into it. The players, the fans, the manager gets the club. It seems like the harmony is there between the manager and the board, Dane Murphy, and everything is working and linking together well. And it just manifested itself on Tuesday night with that belief from the fans and everybody. Even when the team were down and struggling, the fans got behind them in a way I've rarely seen at Forest. The special moment was when the chant "Forest of Magic" on and off the pitch started, and it just kept going and getting more and more vocal. And that was a really special moment.
Okay, Baz, last word to you.
Well, remember when we did the series of magic moments?
Mm-hmm.
And I think mine was the Norwich away game where Forest fans just chanted constantly throughout the entire second half, and then Steve Stone bundles in a goal at like 85 minutes or something and goes on the radio the next day saying it was the fans that kept us going. That's what Tuesday night felt like, but it wasn't an away game, it was a home game, and that's the first time I've heard it at a home game, and it was brilliant.
Okay, and just for the record, as you may or may not be able to hear, I've been drinking honey and lemon for 4 days since Tuesday night because my throat still hasn't recovered. That's how much we were making noise and how consistently we were making noise. But now is the time for the noise to end. There is obviously going to be a big build-up and big anticipation for the big match on Sunday, the 29th of May. If you've got a ticket, we'll see you there. If not, cheer us on from home. Make Nottingham the noisiest place in the country. And also, congratulations, because Notts are taking over London. Mansfield Town will be there the night before us. And good luck to Notts County with their playoffs to try and get to the London Stadium. I want to say a big thank you to tonight's panel, Baz, Stephen Toplis, the Marriage on the Midlands, and Tom Newton. I want to say thank you to Hal from the Sheffield United Way and Brady from And He Takes That Chance. And also thank you to producer Winston. And most of all, thank you, listener. This is our 75th podcast of the season. It's been an absolutely crazy season. We will be back after the final to reflect upon it, whether we win or lose. But thank you so much for joining us throughout the season.
Yeah, because we didn't take those chances in the first leg. Sports Social Podcast Network.